Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Thank you. So we were invited this morning to talk to everyone about Imagine Housing. I'm Carolyn Ferris, and I am chair of the board of directors for Imagine. My partner in crime here is Molly Judd. She is the director of fund development at the organization and is absolutely fabulous partner in crime. So thank you for that.
So thank you again, everybody. And it feels kind of funny to me that I'm here at St. Andrews talking to a number of you about Imagine Housing, because I'm sure a number of you know how Imagine Housing came to be. And so it was really exciting for me to come and see, you know, where this organization and this vision like truly came together, and to share with all of you what became of what you started 35 years ago. So thank you for having us. It's really exciting to be here in person and to share some of this information with you. And as we go through this presentation, please feel free to just raise your hand either online or here in the room. It's, you know, it's not a very formal. Yeah, I'd rather have just like a very natural conversation with all of you about what we are trying to do around affordable housing. This photo you see here, this is actually one of our residents with her children. She let us into her home so we could start to show people, you know, all the kind of experiences that are happening within Imagine Housing's properties. So our mission as an organization is to develop affordable housing, build welcoming communities, and foster vibrant futures. So we have kind of a three-legged mission. I think the thing that we are known the most for is building affordable housing. That's the most tangible thing, you know, kind of the most clear difference between when there wasn't affordable housing and now there's affordable housing. But there are other components of our mission that are just as integral to ensuring that families and individuals and seniors and veterans continue to stay stably housed. And that means that we provide support services. So there's a little bit, there's all different kinds of housing available to people who are experiencing housing instability or homelessness. The kind of housing that we provide is permanent affordable housing. So that means that anyone who lives in our buildings will always be able to live there. They don't have to move out. There is no kind of instigation for them to move on from Imagine Housing. Their rent will always be affordable to them, and our buildings will always be affordable options within the community. So they're permanently affordable apartments. We are a permanent affordable housing provider with support services. So probably like, I don't know, 15 years ago, I think it was, the organization decided to integrate resident services into the programming that happens at an Imagine Housing property. And what that means is that there's case managers on site. Residents have the option to access those services that the case managers provide. It's not a requirement of living at an Imagine Housing property, but it is a really important support that is provided to individuals and households as they navigate other resources that the community provides, including resources you all provide here at the church. And so those people are really there, the case managers are really there as a partner with the resident, and our resident services director often says, and I think this is a really interesting term, she says that they come alongside the resident. So we're not driving anything, but we are there coming alongside that household, making sure that they are able to access the things that they need to heal or, you know, move goals forward or just access basic needs. So that's the kind of housing we provide, and that's really, I think, why our mission has kind of these three tiers, is that we build buildings, we drive community, and we help people thrive.
Break in for a moment.
Yeah.
Just to add to that, I think it's remarkable to know also that we're really one of the only providers on the East Side that do what we do. So again, I think about Congregations for the Homeless, which all of you know about. There's also Sophia Way for the women, and that does temporary shelter for folks. But Imagine Housing, as Molly points out, is once someone moves into our facility, they never have to leave, even if their income changes, either higher or lower. And having the resident services is also a big game changer. So, and we'll talk more about kind of some stories of some of our residents.
Yeah. So one other thing that I thought was important, just kind of level set you know, why, I mean, I'm sure everyone understands why affordable housing is important, but from a factual place. So Imagine Housing ensures that affordable housing remains possible in East King County. So we know there's a lot of development happening over in East King County. There's lots of zoning changes that are enabling multifamily housing to grow. There's all sorts of investments in public transportation. The whole region is really moving to build more housing units because there's so much demand. Within that, we need to make sure that there are affordable housing units available to people who are currently living here, but also who want to live close to where they work or want to be able to access the same kind of amenities of living on the east side. And so annual household needed to secure a one-bedroom apartment here in Bellevue, Seattle area is $80,000. So that means if you were earning minimum wage, that you would have to work about 100 hours a week to be able to afford that without being severely rent burdened. And so we talk about this rent burden concept. It's a HUD concept, which means that no household should pay more than 30% of their annual income in order to live. So we don't want anyone to be spending more on their housing than needs to be, because then that impacts what you could pay for your medical needs, all sorts of other things that you might want to invest in your own life. The other statistic that I think is really important is that 64% of older adults in this region are moderately or severely rent burdened. So as people age and as people are living on a fixed income, the rate that our housing is increasing in terms of rent, it's really impacting older adults at a much larger rate because their flexibility and their income is much more limited.
Some interesting statistics in terms of the population within our buildings. About 30% of our residents are coming in directly from homelessness. And as you might imagine, many of those folks have been severely traumatized and have issues both from a mental and physical health perspective. So they need a lot of help to be able to integrate into our communities. I will also say that over 60% of our households are earning less than $20,000. Many of them aren't earning any money. And imagine trying to survive on the east side at even the $20,000 figures. They simply wouldn't be able to live here without Imagine Housing's homes. And again, it's all about, I was talking with former mayor of Redmond, Joan McBride, and she said, everyone should have the right to live in Redmond and or on the east side because it is such a wonderful place to live. And that's what we believe as well. We have some of the best school districts. So being able to have families come in and live in this neighborhood means just a better outcome for their children and for those families. So again, I'm very proud of what Imagine Housing accomplishes.
We thought it would be best if you all heard from a resident herself. So I'm going to show a video from one of our residents that we shared at an event in November.
Yeah, I'm actually from the east side, from Bellevue, Kirkland, Redmond. I grew up over here. I went into foster care when I was like 11 years old. So I've kind of bounced around throughout Washington since then, up until 18. I went to high school over in Port Orchard, across the water. That was due to the fact of foster care. I would have preferred going to high school over here with Lake Washington or Juanita, but I didn't get that opportunity. So, you know, it shaped me into the person I am today. There's good things, there's bad things. I'm grateful for the experiences that I've had, you know, with foster care. It makes me want to, you know, help other children, you know, help kids that are there in that situation, and just vouch for them and try to get them that help that they need. Just gives a different perspective when you've been through it. You know, there's a lot of hiding from it, you know, like you don't want your friends knowing it's something that you're not, you know, oh yeah, I'm going to my foster parents this weekend or whatever, you know. You don't share that information. So there's a lot of hiding behind it. It can be embarrassing because you don't have you come from, some people come from broken families. You know, there's a lot that goes into, you know, being into foster care. And it's not always pretty. So I was 11 when I got taken away and put into foster care, and I aged out at 18. So, you know, I was angry at my mom a lot. I mean, I started self-harming when I was in junior high. And it, I mean, it continued up until, like, I was, up until 18. You know, I didn't want to keep on going. I didn't feel like I had family. I didn't feel like I had support system. I didn't have anyone, you know, rooting for me to get my license like my twin did. You know, I was angry a lot, you know, that she got so much help and I was the one that was left on the sidelines to do everything kind of myself. Not really, but, you know, kind of. I was alone. You know, I had turned 18, so I thought that, you know, nothing applied to me anymore. I'm an adult. I can do whatever I want. And that's not the case. I had dropped out of high school, because I was homeless, and it was in my senior year, and then I got pregnant, and then I gave birth, and then I went back to high school and got my diploma. So, you know, I was really scared when we left the hospital, not knowing that, I mean, knowing that we were going back to a van and not a home. We had to talk with social workers to make sure that, you know, we were getting help with housing. You know, it's not like we planned to live in the van forever. It was just a stepping stone. And so, you know, being looked at like you can't care for a child, and then, you know, being told by doctors, you know, checking on you and all this, it just kind of, like, knocks you down a little bit. We were in the van for, like, a week and a half when we had just given birth before we got into the transitional housing. And I breastfed with my daughter, so I could not pump in the van, in the car. Like, you know, you have to plug this stuff in. I was so happy to be able to, pump inside of an apartment, you know, and be able to store breast milk in the freezer. Those little things, like, they really just open your eyes to, like, what living without a home, without a fridge or a freezer, you know, because I tried keeping that stuff in a cooler with ice and whatnot, and it was way too hard. I mean, the milk was spoiling because the temperatures were off. So, I mean, yeah, transitional housing is a blessing. But, you know, I'm grateful that we had also had that experience because it gave us, you know, like, we'd never rented any kind of apartments before, never had housing. So it gave us a sense of, like, home, gave us a sense of, you know, being able to save some money because, you know, we were only paying 30% of our income at the time. And then even that, they cut it down to half of that so that we could save money for when we had come here. Yeah, when we got the call from 30 Bellevue that we were getting, that we got accepted for one of the units, it was really, 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 like, all the stress on our shoulders were gone. You know, we were finally going to have permanent housing, you know, housing that you don't have to worry about. You're going to be kicked out because your lease is going to end, you know. It was, you know, again, it was just, all the stress was gone, you know, finally can relax and just have a little bit of peace, you know, and start building our lives from here on up, you know. It was amazing, you know, godsend. First time I walked into our unit here at 30 Bellevue, I felt overjoyed, ecstatic. I mean, I just was buzzing with emotions. I realized that because her dad was actually working the day we moved in, so I realized that I didn't take a video, and I started taking a video, and all you can hear is me huffing and puffing in the background because I've been bringing stuff up. But it was also the excitement because, you know, I finally can just, again, relax, you know, just know that we have a peace of mind, you know, that we'll be safe, we'll be okay. You don't have to worry about where you're going to sleep the next night. I always say I've been through hell and back too many times to count, but it's made me into the person I am. You know, I'm very strong-willed. I will not give up, so. Being here at 30 Bellevue, my child and I, we're so much safer than we were before. I appreciate being here, you know, I feel safe, I feel grateful. You know, I can allow her to play and not worry about her and her safety, which is something I've always wanted.
So we filmed that video with Michaela last October. And since then, she's gotten her first job. She was ecstatic. She's working at Starbucks, and she's also enrolled in Bellevue College. So just kind of like give some more detail on, you know, moving into Imagine Housing, what that really has opened up for her and for her family. So does anybody have any questions about, you know, that came up when you were watching that video, or should we just keep moving along? So 30 Bellevue is our newest Imagine Housing property. It's in Bellevue, and it's the congregation that shares it with is St. Luke's, right?
Yes, it was built on the property of St. Luke's Lutheran Church, which is a potential source for property for us to develop, because a lot of the churches have a lot of properties that goes unused. So that St. Luke's offered about half of their property, I believe. And I think it's a 6-story building. I can't remember how many units. Do you remember?
I'm pretty sure it's about 70 units in there. And it also shares space with the Sophia Way. The Sophia Way has space over there also. And the building itself houses families. So we do have a number of senior-only buildings, but this building is for all households. It has various size units. So we have like studios, one bedrooms, two bedrooms, depending on what the family needs. It also, I think, is almost half set aside for individuals who are a part of the coordinated entry program with King County, which means that those individuals or households are coming to Imagine Housing directly from homelessness. And so that property, we have 3 case managers there, actually. So I've talked with you about, you know, we build the buildings, people are then able to come and live at Imagine Housing. But then in order for them to really get the support that they need and feel connected to the community, we have case managers. At 30 Bellevue, we have 3. We have 2 typical resident services case managers that really work one-on-one with households. Then we also have a community engagement case manager who organizes all sorts of community programming to really make connections with our organization, with other agencies, but also for the residents themselves to create connections. And we felt that that was especially important because 30 Bellevue, people moved into 30 Bellevue like a year and a half before the pandemic started. And then obviously we all know what happened at the very beginning of the pandemic. There was lots of isolation. There wasn't a lot of opportunity for people to make connections with one another and really build bonds. So we asked the city of Bellevue to invest in that third position, and they did, which we are very grateful for. No, it's in relation to the unit that they move into. So just like any other, apartment provider, we need to allow rent to go up to account for all the kinds of like cost of living increases and fees associated with that property. But in relation to the unit that person moves into, so we have like 30% area median income units, 50% area median income units. It will always be calibrated to what their income was when they moved in. It doesn't mean that they won't have rent increases, but the rent increases would be, it would be basically, you would look at like the whole household and it would be more tied to the unit AMI.
Add to that?
Yeah.
I'll just touch on this because doing affordable housing is incredibly complicated, not just to build the building, but also to maintain it and to manage the residents. So you pointed out, Cheryl, that in some cases, income of the family might go up or it might even go down. So there is an effort made to try to kind of track that. We may end up designating their unit to be somewhat different than what Molly says, but it has to be done within the conscripts of when that building was built in terms of how many units are at 30% versus 50%. My point is, it's really complicated, and we want to, from a maintenance perspective, to try to get those rents to where it's appropriate for the individual families, but also we need to get the income, because quite honestly, you can't survive without that rental income. But it's not as straightforward as just simply saying we're going to raise everybody's rents 2%, because again, it has to be calibrated for the different units and for the individual family. So it's hard.
Yeah, there's lots of different avenues. So you can go onto Imagine Housing's website and call us. So that's one way. And we have a woman who's worked at Imagine Housing for a long time. Her name's Hester. She fields those phone calls pretty frequently. But more likely, the way that a household is connected to us is similar to the story that Michaela told, where Michaela worked with a case manager because she was seeking housing. I'm not sure what agency or organization she worked with. She might have worked with King County, or she might have worked with another agency that works with homeless individuals, and got into transitional housing. We often work with those transitional housing providers to place families or individuals, because there's a, you know, there's kind of like this pathway that we are able to help kind of create the end point. So anybody can certainly seek to live in an Imagine Housing property. They don't have to go through another agency or through the county, but I'd say probably most likely it's through relationships that we have with other agencies, like Friends of Youth we have set asides for, Sophia Way we have set asides for, Congregations for the Homeless we have set asides for. So we always try to partner with those other organizations to help the clients that they're serving find housing.
Yeah. So we're also working to build up relationships with the Bellevue School District, because there are a lot of unhoused families out there. That's kind of in its beginning format, because we've really not done that before, but we feel really strongly that that's important to do, again, to be able to support the families in our neighborhood.
Yes, we do. So we are our 16th property is planned to move into construction this summer. It's called Sama Senior Community. It's going to be in Bothell, right along the river. I think right next to the senior center. That's right there. That will be 76 units of affordable housing. I believe it's a mix of studios and one bedrooms. So that is moving forward in the near term. And then some of you may have heard about a property that was donated to Imagine Housing probably 4 years ago now, 4 or 5 years ago.
It was someone from this congregation that was very, very generous. I'd love to tell the story. it's a member of this congregation that gave us, it's a commercial property right close to 130th. It's on 132nd, actually. It's within a block of the light rail station that's going at 130th. So it's incredibly valuable. Right now there's kind of warehouses and some shops in there. And so from our perspective, it's a huge bonus because we get rental income from those tenants. But of course, our long-term dream would be able to put some affordable housing on that land. It would probably be with mixed income as well. But you can imagine how amazing it would be to have affordable housing close to transit. Yeah. Anyway, it's exquisite, and we are so incredibly blessed to be able to have that property. Any other questions? Maybe we can keep rolling. Okay.
Hey. So one other thing that I just wanted to touch on is the impact that donations have on Imagine Housing. So I joined Imagine Housing in May of last year, so it's been almost a year since I've been here. And when I was learning more about the organization, the thing that was really compelling to me was that there was a mix of funding sources. So we receive public funding from the cities and from the county and from the state and often maybe even from the federal government. So that's a really important input that we're all, you know, a part of. We also receive revenue when we complete a building. So because the organization itself is an affordable housing developer, when a building's completed, there's a fee that the organization receives, and we're able to reinvest that. There's also the funding that we receive from our residents that we were talking about. So rent and property operations, you know, that's a part of our revenue. And then the final piece really is philanthropy. So individuals, corporations, foundations, making investments in the organization. And so from my perspective as a fundraiser who's worked in this field for honestly almost 20 years, which is kind of mind-boggling to me, that kind of mixture creates a really strong platform for an organization to be successful. But in addition, it creates a really compelling opportunity for individuals who want to make charitable investments in an organization, because you're really allowing kind of the most aspirational vision to occur. All of our other budgets are very rigid and driven on, you know, like what state or city policies will allow or what the property will allow in terms of it being able to provide money for resident services. But philanthropy really fills that really aspirational piece, and it can have such an exponential impact because it can make dreams possible. It can make growth possible. It can make all sorts of visionary ideas around affordable housing possible because it has that basis in the public funding. So each year, you know, philanthropic donations make a lot of things happen at Imagine Housing Properties. It connects people with basic needs, with those case managers we're talking about. It allows for us to move forward with providing meals at our sites. And it also allows us to, during COVID, we were able to provide, at the very beginning of the pandemic, $600,000 in rental assistance. Because of that investment that donors made in Imagine Housing, I've been able to use that for the last year, and we've received $1.5 million in public funding for rental assistance, and we're still pushing the cities to provide us even more. So that's another way that charitable contributions from individuals, foundations, community groups like the congregation really create credibility and confidence for those other funders to invest, because we were able to demonstrate that, yes, we can take all this money, make sure it gets all distributed to residents, and it has positioned us to really well to access those other funds. So these are all the different ways of support. Obviously, you can volunteer your time. Now that everything's opening up post-pandemic, we are hosting community meals. There's lots of different ways you can support a community meal. It doesn't mean that you need to cook it yourself. You can help us set up and break down or contribute an item. We have a volunteer engagement manager who can help connect you with a community to do that. We also have some special events coming up. We have a gala in May and a golf tournament in August. So, you know, having volunteers help us put those events on really makes a big difference in terms of the amount of money that the event can raise. And then you can also make a financial contribution. So there's all sorts of different ways individuals or entities can make a financial contribution to support Imagine Housing. And then I think that's pretty much the end. This was just a save the date for the gala, which again is coming up on May 14th. And then our golf tournament on the 29th of August. And then this is just a picture of SAMA that we were talking about. So the senior community that we're moving forward, hopefully in the summer, to break ground. There's been a little bit of delay with this property because of COVID impacts on just construction itself. But then you all may have heard about the concrete strike that's been happening. So there are just some things that are slowing it down, but we're like hopefully moving it forward in the summer. Some of them, but it's much better just to reach out to Angel, and her contact information is there. Okay. She's our volunteer coordinator. Because there's kind of like the consistent ones, but then there's always, you know, opportunistic ones, like especially since it's the springtime, there's a lot of community gardens at a number of our properties. So that wouldn't be something that's available all year round, but it's probably ramping up now. I would say that it vacillates year to year, but my feeling, like if I had to kind of give you a gut, is about a third, maybe even a little bit more. So because of the pandemic, there have been lots of extra pools of public funding coming through the federal government all the way down into your cities, but also the county, I think, has really prioritized human services as well with its own funds. And then Bellevue established its 1590 fund. So that's a new pool of money for affordable housing that we've been able to access. So I would say because of the context that we are in, I would say around 30% of our revenue is probably coming. Imagine Housing's revenue is coming from public sources but you know, that has a chance to increase. And those are multi-year contracts. So like we just renewed our contract with the county for 5 years. So we know how much money they're going to be giving us every year for 5 years. Mm-hmm. To a point, so I can say, you know, I can't track your dollar all the way through, but I can tell you how it's used and who it's serving. I can't tell you what property, unless that's something that the donor decides that they want to have. Like if they really wanted to only support a specific population, donors can certainly specify, yeah, definitely. One other thing I guess that I'd like to mention, so when I joined the organization, there was a lot of leadership transition happening. And that's something that has continued to occur since I've started, and been very fortunate that Carolyn has been here as a kind of a consistent voice during that time. But I wanted to just share with you, you know, my experience and where we are now. And I don't know if anybody has any questions about that. But we currently have an interim CEO. That interim CEO was hired in January of 2020, but he has stayed on for now over a year. And he really helped the organization think about how it should be best organized to fulfill the full purpose of our mission, which is not only to build affordable housing, but to make sure that everyone in the community feels like they belong, feels like they are supported, and are able to thrive. So he comes with really deep experience in the public housing space and has been an amazing asset. And over the time that I've started, we've hired a number of other directors. So my peers in the organization, we have a director of resident services, we have a director of real estate development, we have a director of finance. Some of those people have been there for a long time, but some of us are very new. And he was very strategic in identifying professionals with deep experience in each of those spaces. So we have this really wonderful multidisciplinary team that I love to work with and partner with. And in addition, they stratified our resident services model. So rather than just having the case managers and a director at the top, we have managers that help those on-site case managers navigate really specific things to ensure that we can best support housing stability. So we have a housing stability manager, and we have also another manager who works with our veterans, because those veterans programs are pretty complicated. So the resident services team has grown significantly. And they're much more effective in supporting the households that they're there to work with, because they themselves have support, rather than just kind of being, you know, alone, not really understanding how to access all of the resources. And that team is a really robust, and it's the largest team we have on our organization's chart. The other thing that happened in September was our board of directors at the time made this very courageous decision, because the organization is moving to push towards a huge growth trajectory, that they wanted to create the space to have the organization think through who should be on the board and what expertise should be on the board, but also what perspectives are really important as the organization continued to move forward. And so those board members stepped down in September, and what we did from that point until December, or what Carolyn did with Sean and some of the rest of us helping, was recruit an amazing cohort of new board members. And so, Carolyn, do you want to share a little bit about? Okay.
So it has been an amazing journey, and one that's been really fulfilling as well. As Molly pointed out, we had the opportunity through the real selfless action that the former board took to be able to step down, to be very intentional about who we wanted to invite to participate in the board. We now have 7 people that are on the board. We're adding probably 2 more in the next week. We are more than 50% BIPOC. Also, more than 50% of our board members have had lived experience in low-income housing. We also have 2 residents that are on the board. And I will say it has drastically changed the kinds of conversation that we have in board meetings, because now we're very much focused on what is it that's going to help our residents thrive. Yes, we want to build buildings, but the reason we are there is to make sure that the residents that are in our properties are able to survive. I will say we're also more focused on making sure that our existing properties are well taken care of. That kind of got away from us for a little bit, especially during COVID. But we're, I think, in a much better place right now. And the board members are really excited about what's ahead. And I think they're really trying to be visionary in what we do. So one of the other things that happened during this time of recruitment, Sean and I spent hours and hours on phone calls and in meeting with all the mayors in the area, the city council members, different stakeholders. And to a person, when we were telling the story about the renewal of our board and the renewal of leadership, they all just said, it is so important for Imagine Housing to survive and not just survive, but thrive, because you are the only ones that are doing this work on the East Side, and we simply can't do it without you. So they were really, really supportive of what we were trying to accomplish. And I don't know whether it was exactly because of it, but it was not too long after having those conversations that we got increased funding from the county and also from the city of Bellevue, which is a big, big thing. Well, we're working on that with cities of Issaquah and Redmond and Kirkland as well. But it really has kind of changed our trajectory in a way, because we were able to be so proactive in that communication out within the community, so that now we are definitely more visible and more trusted, so that we can hopefully continue to do the work. All right. Well, with that, again, I really appreciate everyone being able to be here and all of your support now and in the future. So don't hesitate to reach out if you have any questions or anything that we can do. Thanks.
Thank you for having me.